Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Mark Schwartz, the Homeland Security Department's Citizenship and Immigration Services Chief Information Officer. Mark, this is the first time for you. It's a rarity I can find a CIO out there who I haven't talked to before, so welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
I know this was a long time coming, and I appreciate the fact that you are going to sit down with us today and talk about some of the cool things you guys are doing at CIS. So, but I want to start at the very beginning. What is the mission of the Citizenship and Immigration Services?
Well, the mission of USCIS is to grant immigration and citizenship benefits while at the same time ensuring the integrity of the immigration system. So we have to do both at the same time. Each year we receive about 6 or 7 million applications for different types of benefits, and we adjudicate the applications, decide whether to grant the benefit or to deny it. And in some cases we produce a proof of the benefit, like a green card. I'm sure you're aware of those. We also have part of the organization that is aware of looking for potential fraud and national security issues. And the adjudicators have to consider the law, consider their judgment on the cases when they're deciding whether to grant the benefit or to deny it.
All right. So you 6 to 7 million applications for benefits a year. That's an incredible amount. Hopefully it's not paper anymore, which I think that's where your role comes in. You as the CIO hopefully supports that mission. Talk about that support of the CIS mission.
Well, to tell you the truth, we do still have a lot of paper in the system, although we're working on that. As the CIO, I lead the IT organization that provides the information technology capabilities for accomplishing that mission. We have probably on the order of about 60 or 70 legacy systems that have been in use for a while that organize the information, track the results of the adjudications, and do all kinds of other things. So we sustain those applications, we maintain them, we enhance them, we make sure they continue to fit what the agency needs to do. We also provide end-user support services to all of the folks in the agency. We're scattered over about 225 locations or so, mostly in the continental U.S., but a few outside as well. We, of course, look after security, privacy, and things like that, the infrastructure. And we are working on a number of new initiatives, some of them very exciting, that have to do with improving customer service and streamlining the way that we process the application.
I want to go back to your role. You in the community, the federal community, broad one, are seen in the most part as a big thinker. I mean, you guys are doing a lot of interesting work around those new initiatives like agile development. But what is your role when it comes to the day-to-day operations of CIS?
I have a wonderful team that handles all sorts of things. By temperament, I love to be involved in the strategic side of things. I love to be pushing things forward, but I'm still involved in the day-to-day as well. But fortunately, I do have a wonderful deputy and employees who can give me the space to actually be thinking about the future and what directions we want to take the organization.
From a typical day, I mean, do you spend how much of your time in the day-to-day versus how much of your time in the strategy world?
Oh, it's been varying quite a lot. But it's a little bit hard to say. The day-to-day tends to revolve around incidents that come up, small changes in the way the agency wants to do business. I spend, I'd say, very little time on just keeping the lights on, but some of my time goes to small changes in policy or in operations that we have to find some way to support on the information technology side. But I've been lucky lately. I've been able to do a lot of the forward-leaning thinking, especially being involved in our transformation program. That's been taking a lot of my time lately. And some of the user-facing, user-centric design initiatives that we have going.
And talk a little bit about your role as it relates to other CIOs within DHS. I know, for instance, I had a good conversation with Charlie Armstrong, the Customs and Border Protection CIO, about a month ago or more, and he talked about how you guys are working together, for instance, on different programs. So talk about your relationship more broadly.
Well, that's very nice of him to say. We work together, the CIOs across DHS. We sit together in the DHS CIO Council, and we share ideas there and work on DHS-wide initiatives. But we also have a pretty good informal relationship between the CIOs, and we like to share best practices, share ideas, discuss problems and issues. So we do a lot of that as well. I know I've been pushing things a lot on the agile development front. It happens to be an area that I have a lot of experience in, I know a lot about. And as I said before, I've had the luxury of being able to focus on some of these bigger issues, more strategic issues. So I think I've been driving the agenda within DHS as to how we're implementing contemporary practices like agile development. But at the same time, CBP, for example, is rolling out or has rolled out a number of agile initiatives. And we've had a back channel going, you know, where I find out what they're doing with some of the ideas that we've shared. And then I incorporate those techniques into the way that I'm organizing things here. So really, it is a two-way kind of a thing. But as I said, I think I have had the luxury of being able to drive the agenda a little bit.
And I know just from talking to former DHS CIO Richard Spires and others in that position, Margie Graves, and as the deputy DHS CIO, there's also that CIO council internally to DHS. I know you work through them and take advantage of some of those enterprise services. Is that governance process working? Because I know over the years it's been one of those areas with every agency that's been so disparate, that's very diverse, getting that the CIOs all on the same roadmap, if you will, is not an easy accomplishment.
Governance is tricky because on the one hand, you want to formulate rules based on best practices or what you believe are best practices. On the other hand, the way we do things constantly changes, especially in the technology world. So in a way, governance is always, I think, you know, this is not about DHS, this is just a general point. Governance tends to be a step behind. You always have to have something that's driving changes in governance based on changes in what's believed to be the best way to get things done. In DHS, I've had a ton of support from the DHS CIO, Luke McCormack, and his deputy, Margie Graves, and that's maybe one of the things that has put me in this advantageous position of being able to bring new practices into the organization. Their willingness to look at new ideas and help me figure out how to fit them within the governance framework that we have now.
Interesting, because I think you know, when you talk about governance frameworks and stuff, it is such a big deal. I'm hearing it from more and more CIOs who are focused on really getting a better, whether they call it an integrated project team, an IPT, or they just call it a CIO council meeting internally. Let's talk about your office real quick. You talked about 225, I think, locations, mostly in the CONUS, you know, nationwide, but some outside. How big is your staff? How many contractors do you have versus federal employees? And talk a little bit about your IT budget.
The federal staff is about 450 feds. And contractors, I'm not sure what the number is offhand. We're actually in a year of recompeting lots of contracts and taking different approaches to how we're organizing the contract. So a little bit hard to say. I wouldn't be surprised if we had about 1,200 to 1,500 or so contractors or contractor FTE equivalents. So it's a fairly large staff. A lot of it is driven by the need to support all of the disparate geographical locations. We also have some big programs like our transformation program, and we've recently changed the contracting model around that with what we call our FADS procurement model, where we're taking teams of agile developers from different contractors and putting them together working on the same project. So we're in the midst of a lot of changes around how we use contractors, but 450 feds or so, and boy, I wish I could tell you offhand how many are located here in headquarters. I think a couple of hundred of those.
And just real quick, your budget from an IT perspective in 2014?
The budget is about, when you include everything, it's about $500 million. That's including payroll costs, the portion of transformation that we pay for out of the IT budget, and then the various sustainment and development efforts.
All right, very nice. Well, you give us a little bit of a heads up on some of your priorities and the big issue you guys are working on, the FADS procurement model. So when we come back from break, let's talk about that. My guest is Mark Schwartz, the DHS Citizenship and Immigration Services CIO. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My guest is Mark Shortz, the Homeland Security Department's Citizenship and Immigration Services CIO. Now, Mark, before break, we were talking a fair amount about the role of CIS, your role as CIO of the Citizenship and Immigration Services. And then you mentioned just toward the end there, the transformation program and the use of the FADS model. Let's start right there. What is the FADS procurement model? And then talk about that transformation program more generally.
The FADS model is a new idea on how to procure agile development services. It actually is part of an ecosystem of different contracts that we put together. So with FADS, we are contracting for agile development teams. Each team is about 9 people or so. And we made awards to 4 different contractors. And from each contractor, we can order essentially as many teams as we want, starting out with 2 teams from each contractor. So we have 8 agile teams all together working on transformation from those contractors. And every 6 months, we enter a new option period and we can readjust the number of teams. So the idea is we're still in the first base period now, but as each of the periods ends, we're going to look at the performance of those contractors and decide how many more teams we want or fewer teams. And if we want more teams, we'll choose which contractors to ask for the teams from. And we hope, using that kind of a model, to keep the contractors in some amount of competition with one another. So they hopefully want our business, our continued business. And so if they can show us what a great job they're doing, then we'll wind up getting more teams from them as we grow the project. And at the same time, one of the criteria that we're evaluating them on and that we've discussed with them is how well they collaborate with the other contractors on the project and with the feds on the project. So they're both incentivized to collaborate and cooperate and keep the government's best interests in mind. But at the same time, there's some amount of competition. I prefer really to think about it as they should want to show us how great they are, regardless of what the other contractors are doing. We've combined that contract or that set of contracts with something we call our TICS contract, our Transformation Integration and Configuration Services, which takes the code that's produced by all those teams and integrates it together and puts it into our automated test pipeline and automated deployment pipeline. So the two sort of fit together. We have the FADS contractors, multiple teams, creating code, creating the new system, and then we have the code integrator that's pulling all the pieces together, but not performing the role that was traditionally associated with a systems integrator. This is really code integration.
Does FADS stand for something specific?
It's Flexible Agile Development Services.
All right, and then where did you come up with this idea?
It's something that emerged after lots of back and forth between me and some of our contracting professionals and management directorate leaders, really a wide group. We brainstormed ideas. We tossed around a few different ways of doing it, and we wound up with this. The concept is really sort of a reaction to the bad history that a lot of the government has had with big systems integrators, because with a big integrator, they're playing a lot of different roles and they're typically embedded in the government's program so deeply that it's very hard for them to feel competitive pressure or to really try to kind of blow the government away with wonderful performance. At least that's what we've noticed. That's what we thought. So we said, how could we improve that situation? Well, how about if we make it possible for smaller teams and smaller contractors to play and just open up the playing field a little bit? And then set up an environment where they can really show us how good they are, and they have an incentive to do so, and perhaps feel a little bit of pressure to do so. So we tried a few different models in our heads, and we wound up with this one. We figured it's probably not going to be perfect. We'll learn from it, and then we'll figure out what we want to do next time.
It's interesting. You said up front you worked with the acquisition folks and other leaders. I think a lot of times when people try to come up with a new acquisition approach, and in many ways this is a new acquisition approach to systems development, to systems testing, to integration, they bring in the acquisition folks either too late or after they've already made a decision and says, okay, here now, they throw it over the fence, so to speak, and say, implement it. Is that the key here? Is that the fact is that you got the acquisition folks on board and they were a partner and not a, if you will, order taker?
Yeah, I had the big advantage of being relatively clueless myself. I had, you know, just come into the government. We started this planning for the FADS contract about 2.5 years ago. It took us a while to get it in place. And at that point, I'd been in the government for about 2 years. And I was very far from a contracting expert, really. I didn't know all that much. And so I had to depend on advice from other people. And we happen to have a fantastic contracting organization here at USCIS. And I have always liked bouncing ideas off of my management and getting their guidance and trying to make sure that they were on board with whatever we were doing. So it was kind of natural to put together a team like that. And really the basic idea got improved, I don't know, hundreds folds. I don't know how you'd say that. Many times over by all of their participation.
Once you got it going, what was your reaction from industry?
Yeah, I think everybody was intrigued. I know it generated a lot of buzz. A lot of people came to talk to me at industry events when I was speaking, and I actually got some feedback from contractors that helped me refine the idea as well. I remember a discussion with one contractor who said, "It sounds like you're setting this up so that all of your contractors are interchangeable. What can we contribute? How do you want us to think about our role and set ourselves apart from the others?" And I thought about it a little, and we tossed some ideas around, and I think the model emerged that these teams would have autonomy, so we would set the vision, set what we were looking for from the teams in terms of business requirements, process requirements, and so on. But then within those constraints, the teams should be self-organizing to figure out the best way to deliver what we're looking for. And our expectation is that different contractors' teams are going to approach it in different ways. And as a result of those conversations, we structured it so that they do have a fair amount of freedom, or at least I think they have a lot of freedom to figure out how to manage their own teams and how to best deliver in a way that's unique to their organization, if that makes sense. So the contractor feedback also turned out to be very valuable in formulating the whole idea.
That's interesting, because I think one of the things that people always talk about, contractor feedback, and then when it comes in, it's either A, ignored, or B, the contractors, it's such a new concept that they take the agency back in a different direction. So this innovation that you'd hope for maybe doesn't come through.
But remember, in an agile process, it's all about feedback, right? It's all about continuous improvement. I think we're sort of predisposed once you go down the agile path, you want to hear the feedback that you're getting. And you want to keep molding your model to try to improve it based on the feedback. So it's very natural in a way.
Which is probably one of the reasons why you're starting to have some success. So let's talk about what the first project or the first set of projects you're using this approach on. You said 4 contractors, 2 teams from each contractor. What are you applying this initial FADS program to?
Well, we still have a number of teams on board from the previous contract. So right now we have both things going. We're actually at a very exciting point in transformation right now. We did a soft launch of the brand new version of Ellis, which is the name of the system that we're building in transformation. And this new version of Ellis is set up using a continuous delivery model, in fact, using a DevOps model entirely. So with the continuous delivery model, we have an automated development pipeline and an automated deployment pipeline. What that means is that as soon as developers finish a piece of code and check it in, the system automatically rebuilds itself. Most of our tests are automated, so all of the automated tests run against it. It's like regression testing every couple of minutes. It builds the system, again, all automated, and then if we decide that the build is good, it automatically can deploy it into staging environments, production environments. So all the deployments are scripted as well. It's a very automated sort of setup. It's meant to create fast turnaround. We could do small pieces of new functionality and put them into production very quickly using the automated system and get feedback from users and feedback from production monitoring and reporting and so on. So we can get feedback from a whole different sources and incorporate it into the product as we're building it. So transformation is now set up on that basis. We're actually deploying into the public cloud using this fully automated system. And the FADS teams are working within this environment. And as they create code, it goes into this pipeline, gets tested. They also write the automated tests. And we can have them, these eight teams, each working on different features for the system. And we're hoping that as soon as each feature is completed, we'll be able to deploy it and deploy it perhaps toggled off. This is a technique that's used a lot with continuous delivery. So it can be deployed, but users don't see it until we decide it's the right time for users to see it. And then we flip the toggle and it becomes available. So these eight teams are really, we can switch work between them in different ways. They have the same core skill set that allows them to do development on any part of the system. And we have a pipeline of requirements and product owners who are deciding which requirements are the highest priorities and should flow to the teams.
All right, very good. Now let's take a quick break. When we come back, I just want to talk a little bit more and talk about Ellis a little bit and get some more details on what that looks like. But first, we're going to take a break. My guest is Mark Schwartz, the Homeland Security Department's Citizenship and Immigration Services CIO. I'm Jason Miller, your host, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My guest is Mark Schwartz, the Homeland Security Department's Citizenship and Immigration Services Chief Information Officer. Now, Mark, before break, we're talking a fair amount about the FADS process, agile development. And you mentioned just recently in November, you had a launch of Ellis. What is Ellis? Talk a little bit about how that relates back to this bigger transformation initiative. And then we'll talk maybe looking future of what the FADS model is going to look like going forward.
Ellis is the software system that is being created by the transformation program. It stands for the Electronic Immigration System. And it is a system that will help adjudicators process all of our different benefit applications in a fully electronic way. And on the external facing side, it will allow the applicants to file their applications electronically. Right now, quite a lot of the applications are done on paper, sent into our lockboxes or service centers. And a lot of the processing is on paper. Some of the status tracking is electronic, but with Ellis, we can accept an application fully electronically with scanned evidence associated with it. It can flow through some preliminary processing where we can take a lot of the load off of the adjudicators and then flow to the adjudicators, and they can do their adjudication fully electronically.
And you said the soft launch. Are people using it yet or just a select number? It's like almost like a pilot.
Well, what we did for this particular launch, because this is our first launch on a new architecture that we just designed and on our new continuous delivery framework, we decided to do what we're calling a soft launch or a limited introduction. We opened up the system for electronic filers for 3 days, and we accepted applications. 3 days, we're using Ellis for our I-90 form, which is our application for a replacement green card. It's actually a very big one. We receive about 700,000 of these applications every year. And so in 3 days, we received just over 2,000 applications or so. And then we closed it down again as per plan. And we're going to have the adjudicators adjudicate these applications. We'll take it through the rest of the process. And this way, we'll see if there are any flaws or any areas that we can streamline in the way we're doing it. And then we'll open it up permanently as what we're calling a hard launch, as soon as we've been able to push through as many adjudications as we need to make sure it's really working well.
What's the time frame around that? Are you talking about just a few months? Because with Agile, you hear every 90 days,
yeah.
every few weeks.
Right. Well, in this case, it takes us a while to adjudicate the applications, partly because the applicants have to schedule and appear for biometric appointments. We have to collect their fingerprints and photos and signatures. And that process can take about 30 days. So now that we've finished accepting the applications, we can get that in the works. After they appear for their biometric appointments, we're also training the adjudicators in how to use the system. So it will be a couple of months, probably 2 to 3, 3 months, let's say, to be conservative. Now, while that's going on, we're also developing the features that are going to be in the next few releases of Elif. And our intention is, once we can make it officially hard launched and really open to the public, we'll just keep adding features, many of which will have already been in the pipeline and will be ready. So we'll be more agile after the first hard launch.
I know that part of this is the biometric part, as you said, that takes time. So have you had a chance personally to get to review how things went so far? I mean, I know you're waiting on the adjudicators, but did that soft launch go, 80% as expected, 50% as expected? Can you tell?
It went beautifully. I was very excited about it. The applications came in starting from the very first moment. We were, we had a little war room and we were monitoring everything that was going on. We found a few small issues that we were able to tweak, but it was really on the order of tweaking. And so I would say it went probably better than anyone has a right to expect for a launch of a major new system.
Talk about the future of this FADS program.
We conceived it all along as something that would give us flexibility. So we assume that we will have unknown needs as the years go on. And we set it up. This is why we call it the Flexible Agile Development Services Contract Vehicle. We can add as many teams as we want, up to about 20 altogether. So we have 8 teams now working on transformation. We can add more teams for transformation. We can add more teams for other projects, and we probably will. What holds it all together is the architecture, or the general outlines of the architecture, because that's what determines the skills that we asked for from the contractors. And since we want to move towards standardizing our architecture somewhat, we have so many different legacy systems, we want to get away from that a little bit. So we can add the FADS teams for any new work that we want that's going to be on that one consistent architecture and share the basic skills and approaches that transformation is putting in place.
The other thing you brought up during this conversation was the DevOps approach. One of the other trends I'm starting to see is the use of DevOps to modernize those legacy systems. Give me a sense of your approach using DevOps.
I think it's important not to get too caught up, as we often do, in the whole idea of agile versus waterfall. Is the government going to adopt agile? Really, the question is, are we going to keep up with contemporary practices, whatever they might happen to be? And it's been a little bit of a struggle, I think, or we've had to work hard to bring ourselves up to date. But the agile world has really developed a lot in the last 15 years or so. I mean, agile practices are at least 15 years old, depending on who you ask, going back to the Agile Manifesto. So in the meantime, since that point, agile processes have spawned other agile approaches. What started out as Scrum and extreme programming, these iteration-based approaches to development. Now, in addition to that, we have lean approaches to software development and these continuous delivery, continuous integration practices. And now the word of the day is DevOps. A lot of the leading technology companies are using this DevOps approach, which essentially, as the name would imply, it combines development and operations, and usually security as well, into teams that have responsibility for the full stack, that have to look all the way across from development through what it looks like when that code is in production and actually being operated. And companies like Netflix, Amazon, Spotify, those are the real kind of trailblazers on this DevOps approach. But at this point, the DevOps approach is being picked up by all sorts of companies in other industries, what you wouldn't think of as technology companies, like Walmart, Target, Nordstrom, Macy's, Capital One. Some of these names are on my mind because I just went to a DevOps Enterprise conference a couple of weeks ago, and these were some of the presenters there. So what we're trying to do is keep up with what is considered best practices, benchmarking ourselves not just against federal agencies, but against companies in the commercial sector. So that's where the DevOps approach is coming from. You mentioned legacy systems, and what's interesting there is that DevOps is actually a little bit hard to use with legacy systems. And the reason is that the DevOps approach works well when you have a fully automated pipeline, like I was describing before. You really want to have automated tests for most of your code. And legacy systems typically don't have automated tests. They relied on manual testers. So in order to move into a DevOps model with a legacy system, what you really need to do is first bring it under automated test, first find a way to break it down into pieces, write automated test scripts to test those pieces, create a framework that runs these automated tests frequently, and that's a little bit hard. So the DevOps approach works really well when you're building a new system, or if you're going to have that discipline to go back to your legacy system and put it under that sort of a testing approach, which I do recommend for anybody who's trying to do extensive modifications on a legacy system.
Let's add security to that now.
Security is a really interesting area. That's kind of why I wanted to put it into its own category here. I really think that using a DevOps approach, the government can really improve its cybersecurity posture. It sounds a little bit scary when you first start talking about frequent deployments to production. Some of these big companies that are using DevOps are deploying hundreds of times a day. And from a security perspective, that sounds a little bit risky. But the truth is, the DevOps approach imposes certain discipline. What you need to do in a DevOps approach is keep your system always deployable. And that means that you have to start with a hardened system. And then you have to keep regression testing to make sure it stays hardened. And what we've done, for example, with transformation, is in this automated test pipeline that runs over and over again every time we check code in, we've put security scanning and static code analysis and looks for certain types of security defects. And if it finds them, reports them immediately back to the developer who can correct them. I actually misspoke. We don't run the security scans every time code is checked in. We're doing it. We have been doing it once a day or so, and now we're moving to once every couple of days because we found it's just as effective. But the idea is to constantly retest the system, make sure it's still secure, make small changes at a time to the deployed system so that we're confident that we haven't changed the security of it at all. And then monitor the system in production for vulnerabilities, which is really the idea of continuous monitoring or continuous diagnostics and mitigation, which the government has been putting in place. With a DevOps approach, you put a lot of focus, as I said before, on monitoring the system in production and feeding back to the developers. Well, with a DevOps approach, you can do security monitoring in production. If you find a problem, it immediately gets communicated back to the developers. You have an automated system to repair, well, the developers can repair the system, and then you have an automated system to deploy their changes very quickly. So your time to repair a vulnerability is very, very short with a DevOps process. So I think compared to traditional security models where you're testing at the end of a development process right before you deploy, it's a long testing cycle, and you're periodically redoing authority to operate or periodically redoing your security testing, that's a very weak approach compared to what we can do with DevOps.
That's fascinating in terms of the way you laid it out in terms of the automation and then the real time of people looking at it to repair. You make a good case for why this could improve security across the government.
A game changer.
We love that. Speaking of game changers, we're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about more game changers that you're working on. My guest is Mark Schwartz, the Homeland Security Department's Citizenship and Immigration Services Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My guest is Mark Schwartz, the Homeland Security Department's Citizenship and Immigration Services Chief Information Officer. Mark, we spent a whole lot of time talking about fads and agile and DevOps. There must be just a few other priorities on your plate. So let's talk about those. What are you hoping to accomplish over the next 6 or 9 months?
Well, transformation tends to get all the attention around here. It is a very large program, but maybe a little bit more quietly, we've done very similar things with two other programs. We have something called MyUSCIS and something that we call DIDIT. I'll explain what those are in a second. But both of those are also set up now to use a continuous delivery DevOps sort of approach, and both are being hosted in the public cloud, and both have just had milestones over the last month or so. So MyUSCIS is, in a way, our first real foray into user-centric design. We have been doing a lot of work on looking at our touch points with customers, with the public, and trying to figure out how we can make those touch points more user-friendly, user-centric, streamline them to be a better experience for the public. So we've had brand consulting firm come in and take a look at those touch points and the way we present ourselves to the customers, and they made some great recommendations. And we've had our customer service and public engagement folks here at USCIS spend a lot of time and generate a lot of ideas. And the result was what we call MyUSCIS, which is a new vision for how we interact online with our public. And so we just rolled out the first piece of that, and it includes a new way for users to check the status of their cases. And we have a few really exciting features under development right now using that continuous delivery model, and we plan to just keep pushing out features on a short time frame. So that's one really exciting thing we're doing. We also have this initiative that we used to call SLOPE, we now call DIDIT. This is Digital Innovation and Design, is where the name comes from. And this is our rapid development teams that we can deploy in different geographical areas. They're sort of our SWAT teams that take care of requirements very quickly and have sort of a decentralized governance process so that our different service centers, if the leadership at those service centers needs something done quickly, we can have one of these DIDIT teams co-located with them and using a very fast development tool set to grind out solutions for them very quickly. And that we have now moved to a Ruby on Rails platform, you know, very supportive of fast development and this continuous delivery sort of framework. And with that, we're working on some new models for engagement. One thing we did over the last month is we held a hackathon. This was an internal sort of hackathon within USCIS. Part of what we're trying to accomplish is where in the past there might have been incentive for people in other geographical locations to create little rogue applications that central OIT didn't know about, or you know, whip together an Access Microsoft Access database to do something very quickly. We're trying to provide an alternative to that. And we're doing it by putting in place these local development teams and this development platform and opening it up with sort of an open source model within the agency. So other people who are not in IT, who want to develop or who know of a need that we don't know, can do their own development using the tools that we've all agreed on and put in place. And we can still have some amount of control over it centrally, but we can free them up, you know, sort of free up their creativity. So we put that in place and we had a little hackathon, and that seems to have gone very well, and we're going to build on that little experiment. So those are a couple of the other things that we have had going on. I think from what I said before about DevOps and security, it's probably clear that there are interesting directions we can go with that, right? One of the things we really want to do is build on these DevOps models that we've put in place and use them as a game changer, figure out where to take them next. So those are some of the core areas, being more user-focused, citizen-focused, and internal adjudicator-focused to design our systems in sort of a lean startup way. You know, how can we try little experiments, prototypes, and get fast feedback from users and try to make sure we're designing systems exactly the way that they want them to be.
So it's interesting, the hackathon, the way you described it, I covered in FC a breakfast a number of months ago, and they talked a lot about shadow IT. And there was a split panel of different CIOs who had different approaches to shadow IT. And the one approach that you talked about, you know, setting up a platform that and tools that everyone has agreed upon that meet some security requirements, that meet some architecture requirements, seems to be the path that more of the CIOs on the panel decided that was a better way to do it than just trying to stop and control all shadow IT, which is what a couple CIOs said maybe they would try.
Yeah, it's your impulse, of course, when you're a CIO. but it's not practical, really. The way I take it is it's sort of feedback. When somebody on the business side of the organization decides they need to develop a rogue application or a shadow application, that means that I'm not meeting their needs. You know, they're not doing it just to be spiteful or willful. They're doing it because they have a real business need that's not being met. So the right answer is to try to make sure I can meet that need. And one way to do that is to have these teams that can do quick hits, develop things quickly that are relatively small requirements. So that's one way. Another way is to generally speed up our lead time or our cycle time for turning around software that meets business requirements. And then the third way is this experiment, you know, empower them and let them help and make them partners.
All right, Mark, sounds good. Now, there seems to be a ton more we could talk about, but unfortunately, we are out of time for today. So we will have to get you back on the show and we can talk more because it sounds like your finger is in a lot of different pots and they all seem to be moving in a good direction. My guest today is Mark Schwartz, the Homeland Security Department's Citizenship and Immigration Services CIO. I'm Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Mark, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.